everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's August 2024, and you're listening to episode 408, which is a spoiler-filled conversation about the film Alien Romulus. Today's guest is Cole Burgett. He is a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. Cole teaches systematic theology and Bible exposition classes and writes extensively about theology and popular culture. Cole has written an exclusive online feature film review for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called Alien Romulus, Risk Aversion and the Parable of the Big Bad Company. And you can read this review completely free. We do not have a paywall at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. Cole, it's good to have you on again.
Always good to be here. Thank you.
Well, before we get started on this discussion about the new movie in the Aliens franchise, I just want Cole to kind of give us an overview about just horror movies and the Christian in general. I think when we get comments on social media, people are wondering, why in the world do we even cover such movies? Because a lot of Christians think that they are ungodly, unholy, not things that are good and true and beautiful that Christians should depict. And a lot of times I get the question of, I know things are sinful or bad out there, but why should I even know about them? So why would a Christian at all interact with the whole horror genre? I know we covered it last year, but we've got new listeners and it's been a year, so we will link that article in the show notes. But I want Cole to give a little bit of overview before I ask him more specifically about this movie and franchise.
Yeah, so horror movies are experiencing a little bit of a resurgence, not that they ever really went away in the broader cultural conscience, if you will. And over time, I think they've just become sort of a staple in childhood in particular. One of the things we were talking about recently is, you know, that it seems like there are all of these kids who are watching horror movies now. And as a kid myself, looking back on the cultural cache they had when I was growing up, you know, movies like the slashers, Freddy, Jason, those kinds of things.
Halloween, that goes all the way
back. Yeah, I never really had too much of an affinity personally for those types of movies. I just didn't quite get them, if that makes sense. So I had, you know, friends who would watch these movies and would tell me about them, and they always kind of occupied that sort of dangerous mystique for a kid, right? Anything that has that sort of mystique around it tantalizes you. And the Passion of the Christ actually did the same thing for me when I was a kid, because it was that one rated R movie about Jesus, and it just has that mystique about it because you're not allowed to watch it. But so many movies like the Saw movies, the Final Destination films, I just never could really get into. I'd see them when they were on like television, but just couldn't really see it. It wasn't until I sort of discovered the classic Universal monster movies, which were much more in line with classic monster novels, or what we might think of as gothic horror novels, that I really sort of got into it. You know, most of my friends were watching, like I said, you know, Freddy versus Jason or something like that. But I really loved movies like The Wolfman or Dracula.
The old like classic.
Yeah, the classic Universal monster
movies. Universal monster.
Yeah. Characters. Yeah, those movies, which, you know, are important in from a filmmaking perspective for what it did and how it shaped the genre on screen. But more than this, I really began to have an affinity for the themes that those early horror movies dealt with, which again, you know, it's worth pointing out that these are movies that are adapted from earlier works. And so they're pulling some of the themes and ideas from those earlier novels. And at that point, I really sort of began to reevaluate the importance of the horror genre, just even as a Christian. When I got to Moody Bible Institute, I took a class called Forbidden Knowledge and the Monstrous Novel, where you looked at monster novels and the theme of forbidden knowledge, which is saturates the genre, saturates those novels that are eventually adapted to screen as the universal classics. And the theme of forbidden knowledge, which is right there in Genesis chapter 3, that tantalizing thing that there's something out there we're not meant to know, and then pushing, transgressing that boundary. And then, of course, the fallout of that, the error of that. It's a theme that's right there in the Bible. And so many of these classic monster novels sort of deal with the same thing. So at that point, I really began to reevaluate and have a sort of a renewed appreciation for the horror genre as a whole. That being said, when people sit down and want to talk about the Christian and the horror genre, you know, they're usually talking about the obvious, slasher movies and Christians. Should you watch them? Well, I mean, some people are going to be able to watch them, and it's going to affect them very differently than other people. And it's not going to violate their conscience in any meaningful way. But others, it certainly can, and maybe it even should. And what I've always said with horror movies, and it's not just a horror movie, it's with anything you're watching, a perfectly acceptable conclusion to reach is that I'm not going to watch this anymore and turn it off. And there's nothing at all wrong with that. That being said, do I think that horror films alone should be off limits to Christians? No. I think that's sort of painting with a very broad brush. And while I certainly can say that there are a lot of horror films out there, and certainly most of the horror films that are floating around the popular conscience today, I wouldn't say are anything, great. That being said, there are certain horror films that don't take on the same tone, that don't take on the same emphasis as some of the others. One of the more recent horror films we've talked about before that does this well, I think, is Robert Eggers' film, The Witch. I remember that film came out when I was in college, and I was having a horrible, horrible day. I was not with it in my classes. It was for a lot of reasons. I was just not there. And I sort of came out of my classes and said, I have to go to a movie, because that was sort of my getaway. And I was looking at the Arclight Theater on near North Side, Chicago. And this film called The Witch, had never heard of it, never seen a trailer for it, but it was playing at that theater. I saw that it was horror. It looked different. So I bought a ticket and went. When I walked out of that theater after seeing that film, I was good. It felt like the soul had been scoured, right, with a brush. Because you were sitting in that movie, you're exposed to a real kind of darkness, the kind of darkness that reviles you. But the film also has a very clear-eyed take on the character of Satan, right? And it's so opposite of what we think of as The Exorcist or things like that with the spinning heads and all that stuff. No. In this movie, it's subtle. You don't know where the evil is. And you're watching this family tear itself apart. And it's perfectly logical to think there is nothing supernatural here. This is all paranoia and, little compromises that's leading this family to do this. And then at the end of the film, Satan himself shows up, and he waits until you have nothing left. And then he offers you the world so that there's nothing left but to say yes. And it's absolutely haunting, but it's also extremely clear-eyed. I sort of walked out of that with my sense of this is a crappy day, having been completely reoriented to understanding, actually this is a day like any other, and there's a new dimension to evil that I now have to think about and sift through. And so I do think the horror genre as a whole is perhaps the genre that Christians have most readily given over to the culture to their detriment. And I say that for one reason, and that's because the horror film genre, by and large, is perhaps the only genre that begins with the basic assumption that evil is real and must be dealt with. Now, there are a lot of movies that don't deal with it well. There are a lot of stories that don't deal with it well. But the point is that basic assumption that evil is a very real thing that you have to do something with. That is not something that a lot of genres, especially today in our what we call postmodern culture, likes to see and interact with. And when you hand over that sort of very clear and basic black and white morality to a culture, you sort of can't really turn around and complain when the culture gets rid of your black and white morals. It doesn't make that much good sense to me. And especially when you watch the old Universal monster movies, there is a very clear black and white morality at work in those films that is very close to the morality that we would say you see in Scripture. There is a real sort of hard line morality to the Bible that I think puts a lot of people off today. And you can see that why it would put a lot of people off when you look at the kinds of movies and things like that that we put out. I mean, we've talked at length about the rise of the anti-hero and the veneration of the anti-hero in modern culture. You don't really see too much of that in at least the older horror films. That's perhaps the great contrast there with the Halloween series that you mentioned. In the original film, in Carpenter's original film, which, you know, really is sort of, it's interesting from a production standpoint, the way that it was pulled off and the budget and all that. But in that film, the character that we all now think of as Michael Myers, very iconic, and we go to movies to see what he's going to do next. In that original film, he was just called The Shape. He was almost a supernatural horrific figure. And there's now been this move in the culture to this. We've gone from this fascination with the darkness, this, you know, fear of the darkness, to, ooh, we get excited over what he's going to do next. We want to see what he's going to do next. And forgetting that, you know, these are monsters, and they are meant to be reviling in a lot of ways. So that's enough about that.
Every episode, I talk with our authors about the various articles they've written, but sometimes you might not have to read the actual articles we're talking about. And so I want to suggest to you that you put a new subscription into your podcast audio feed if you haven't done so already. And that's for Christian Research Journal Reads. And so, unlike a lot of books on audio that you can get that it's going to be many dozens of hours, you can listen to a journal article in a fairly short amount of time, and you will be able to listen to the actual article. And I know some of our articles are in depth, and so we want to present those to you. We started this podcast back in January, so you don't want to miss it. Of course, we have so many articles to get to, and so how we've determined what we are going to put onto that podcast is really, honestly, some of the most popular articles on our website. So you might be discovering some articles that you weren't aware of, and we always try to make some of our cultural apologetics articles like this one available on that podcast feed because people want to know if they should see a film that's in theaters now or invest the time to watch a really hot streaming television series. So I commend to you the Christian Research Journal Reads, and you can find it wherever you subscribe to your favorite podcast. And I hope that you're enjoying all of the content that we bring to you here on the Postmodern Realities Podcast and all of the different audio outreaches of the Christian Research Institute. And I would just ask that you consider partnering with us. You know, mainly your time. I know that's really valuable to you, but if you could give us a few minutes of your time and really write out a short sentence about what you like about the Postmodern Realities Podcast, it really helps us. The best way to do that really is on Apple Podcasts. That's the platform where most aggregation is taking place across the internet. That would help us a lot. And then also, if you're saying, well, I just rather quickly give you a short tip or some small amount that would be faster for me, then I would encourage you to go to our website, equip.org, click on journal at the top there, click on Postmodern Realities Podcast. And again, as I say, every single episode, we have a link there on the landing page where you can give us a tip, and something like $5 or $10. It would really help us out because our writers, they research all this stuff for us, and we do pay them. We, you know, I know a lot of people expect things free on the internet, but they use their time and their expertise, and they craft these articles for us, and so we do pay them, and your partnership donation would go towards some of the money that we use to bring you this podcast, to bring you all the free articles where you don't even have to have any kind of subscription or paywall. So we're grateful for the ways that you partner with us. Sometimes just simply telling a friend about this podcast or posting a link to this podcast on any of your social media outlets or texting it to a friend or an email. So thanks so much for being a faithful listener. We really appreciate you and your partnership and listening to us in your earbuds. And so now back to my conversation about alien Romulus and horror films with Cole Brigett. I think one point that you made a few moments ago is that, you know, we're talking about things that are very real, like sin. And when you talk even about Genesis and what happened originally in the garden, when Adam and Eve were tempted by the devil and all those kinds of things, it seems like right now, at least in Western culture, we live these very padded lives against things that are quote unquote bad or evil or things like that. And I think the modern Western mind can forget that we're in a spiritual battle. And I think sometimes some of these movies brings those things out. And also the other thing is people forget, unless they're really active in their yearly Bible, read through the Bible, that there is a lot of very horrific and hard things that are in the Bible that God tells us about. And so it's not like if we decided never to see a horror film or read a book that was like that, that we would not be confronted with evil and horror, because it's very evident in pages of scripture.
Yeah. One of the things that I think as I get older, I become more and more wary of is that that kind of quaint little sentimental Christian veneer. I think it was Stan Hauerwas who made the statement. I hope I'm not misquoting him. I think, but I'm fairly confident with Stan Hauerwas, who made the statement that, you know, the great danger to the modern Christian church is it's not atheism, it's nothing like that. It's sentimentality. It's this kind of, you know, drivel. It's emotion that trades on emotion. It's trading on emotion for the sake of emotion is what it is. And it's this sort of, you know, very limp kind of Christian faith that seeks to airbrush everything that is going wrong in the world. I mean, and certainly, you know, we would not say that Jesus airbrushes the things that are wrong in the world. It's those things that put him on the cross. It's those things that took him to his death. And so I, especially in this conversation about horror films in general, I'm going to be very careful that when the Christian says, you know, I don't believe in watching a horror movie or something like that. Okay. The flip side to that coin, though, is to not run in the opposite direction and, you know, say that there is no category for bad things in my worldview. There is no category for it in big theology words. We call this the theodicy. Sometimes it's called the problem of evil. I don't think that's a great way to say it. You know, evil's not a problem to be solved. I call it the crisis of evil, the question of theodicy. And horror films have a very unique way, horror stories, I should say, just have a very unique way of bringing that problem to the fore of a conversation, to the fore of someone's thinking. And I think if we're talking in the context of cultural apologetics here, the horror film is uniquely positioned to break open those discussions about evil, which, as you know, as should go without saying, it should be fairly obvious that that is a fairly obvious and easy on-ramp to talking about gospel, to talking about the finished work of Christ. And so I say, I think this is a genre that Christians by and large, not all of them, but by and large Christians have handed over to the culture to their detriment.
And we don't want to be in the column of like, you know, not that we don't think that Satan exists, but not in the way sometimes that is a reality. And what happened on the cross, death was defeated. And so I think that it is probably most natural out of horror films to talk to people about the gospel than other maybe genres of film or cultural apologetics, because it is so much right at the forefront that there is evil in this world. Is there such a thing? And a lot of them, you know, certain ones I wouldn't watch myself, but a lot of them do even consider, is there supernatural evil? Where many modern minds do not even believe in the supernatural.
Yeah, that can almost take us into a completely different discussion, but it is true. We live in a very modern world. Some would say postmodern world. I've talked before. I'm not too fond of that label, simply because I don't actually think we're postmodern. We have not moved beyond modernity. Science is still our god in this day and age. You know, we still trust what the doctors say. We do all of that kind of stuff. That is very much the modern mindset. Science is the law of the land, and we have to prove it. And empiricism, that kind of stuff, is the law of the land. So we're still very much entrapped in that. So I don't know that it's that accurate to say that we are postmodern. However, what the horror film does is, and this is actually, if you understand the history of the genre, the onset of modernity is where these classic horror stories come about, because the writers could see what was in there. I mean, this is why Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein. She could see what was in the air. She could read the room, so to speak. And so she writes this story about this scientist who is this doctor who is pursuing forbidden knowledge. He is pursuing the really what you would think of as the triumph of science over God, the creation of life. Can we actually get that far? And she writes this story that sort of pokes the eye of that idea that, oh, do you honestly think that you can sit and play God with no consequences? Do you honestly sit and think that you can take science to its extremes with no consequences? Have you learned nothing from history? Have you learned nothing from Genesis 3? And so this, what you've just described, this way that the horror film can introduce to the modern mind the idea of the supernatural, that actually is baked into the warp and woof of the genre from the very beginning. It is something that this genre has excelled at and is, you know, just another reason why I say Christians hand it over to the culture to their detriment.
Well, I took that break to ask, you know, Cole some of these questions because I didn't want people to turn this off, because one of the things that we try to do through this podcast, through our articles on whatever topic, is help Christians understand what it means to think Christianly. And we don't want to not think Christianly. And part of thinking Christianly is realizing that there is evil, that sin exists, and that we're separated from God and we need to be reconciled to Him. And all these kinds of different things that we do in cultural apologetics helps us get into some of those issues. So now I want to pivot to actually Aliens, which probably some of our listeners maybe weren't even alive when the first, you know, Ground Zero film came out with Sigourney Weaver back in 1979. And here we are all these years later, and we have another installment that we're going to be talking about. But why don't you give a brief overview of the entire series that started way back when, in the 70s, and now we're still finding our very next installment that just is in theaters now that you could see.
Sure. So Alien started in 1979 with Ridley Scott's classic simply called Alien. It's one of the cornerstones of the science fiction and horror genres. At its core, that film and the series as a whole sort of revolves around humanity's encounters with and its relationship with this hostile extraterrestrial species called the Xenomorphs, or the titular alien. these creatures, and everyone has probably seen one. You've seen the silhouette of one. You've seen it on a TV screen. You've seen it somewhere. It's a very iconic design, thanks to H.R. Giger. And the creatures, they're very resilient. They have this parasitic reproductive cycle, acid blood, this drive to kill. And they sort of represent the ultimate nightmare of the unknown, right? This just predatory force of nature that is nearly impossible to combat, right? This is actually one of the things the movies will come back to time and again, is, you know, they have this sort of acid blood, which makes them even more dangerous. Because if you wound it and it bleeds, then the acid eats through. Usually it's set in space. It eats through the ship, and suddenly you're exposed to space. So it's what is called in the movies, it's typically framed as like the perfect killing machine. The original film and that original batch of films, the first four of them, follow the character of Ellen Ripley. Ellen Ripley, played by Sigourney Weaver, who sort of becomes the anchor for that early series and her evolution over the films from this relatively ordinary crew member to a sort of a battle-hardened fighter is part of the franchise's appeal. And part of what was so different there, especially in the time frame when it was coming out, is that it was very much a man's genre. And to have Ripley at the fore, this sort of very strong-willed woman who's a leader, was different for the time, and certainly went against a lot of the what we think of as the quote unquote final girl tropes of the horror genre. Ripley is quite different. So the series started with Alien. It was followed up by what is generally considered to be one of, if not the best sequels ever made, which was Aliens, very subtly titled S there on the end, which came out in 1986. It was directed by James Cameron. It took the idea of the alien and made it, he took it from the horror roots and he made it this great action spectacle. So it's that whole idea of, like, you know, the sequel going bigger than ever before. This is that to a T. And he certainly deepens and evolves the character of Ripley. So you'll often find people who are in the camp of one or the other, right? Which one do you think is better, Alien or Aliens? And people like each for different reasons. But those two original films are absolute classics of the genre, and rightly so. There were two more sequels, Alien 3 and then the film Alien Resurrection, which came out in the 90s. I've never quite been huge fans of either of those. They're not terrible. They're just, you know, compared to the original two, they're just not the best. And the box office and I think critical reviews sort of reflect that, diminishing returns. But those movies take the series into some different directions. It explores military responses, ethical dilemmas with cloning and artificial intelligence. And then, of course, at the core of those movies is corporate exploitation. That's maybe the hallmark, the consistent theme throughout the series is this sort of corporate greed run amok. There's a company called Weyland-Yutani that is there in all the movies. In the original film, it's just called The Company, but it's expanded upon in the later ones. And it's this this company that is studying the alien, it's interested in the alien, that kind of stuff, all at the expense of the crew members, of the human characters. And so there's this this theme of corporate greed and corporate exploitation that runs through the movies. The series also expanded into a couple of prequels in 2012 and 2017. That's Prometheus and then Alien Covenant. Prometheus, both of those were actually Ridley Scott. And I think a lot of people were surprised with Prometheus. They didn't really know what it was when it came out. And then when you actually see the film, it sets up connections to Alien. So I don't think it was advertised as an Alien prequel, but that's what it became. And then it had a sequel called Alien Covenant, which gets into the xenomorphs and their origins. And of course, there's the larger questions of artificial intelligence that deal with their creation and things like that. So those films are a little more philosophical. And I guess different people can get different levels of mileage out of that as time goes on. So that's kind of an overview of the series. And of course, this all sets up the new one.
So, you know, the series has been going on for 45 years, so it has some lasting appeal. And the very first one back in 1979 is oftentimes on, you know, top 100 films of all time, or, you know, what are the best films of all time, or certainly in the genre, one of the best of all time. What is something about this series that has really resonated with audiences for almost 50 years?
Yeah, I think this series has, well, I'll say this first and foremost, the series is capable of blending genres in a very interesting way. Horror is sort of at the core of this, but the first film was horror and sci-fi. The second film was horror, sci-fi, and action. It has an ability to blend genres, and it combines the tension and fear of the horror genre with these very expansive possibilities, and it creates a very unique cinematic experience that can appeal to fans of both genres. The original Alien introduced a new kind, really, of horror, one that was not just about shock, but it was, you know, atmosphere, it was suspense, it was this primal fear of being hunted by something you fundamentally do not and cannot understand. It was very much a slow build-up combined with the eerie silence of space, a very claustrophobic setting on board the ship. And then, of course, the terrifying but strangely beautiful design of the creature itself, which is very, very unforgettable. And then, of course, Cameron comes along, takes the story in a different direction, focuses on action and military sci-fi, and it shifted the tone to allow the series to explore new themes, camaraderie in the face of overwhelming odds, that kind of stuff. And it portrays Ripley as this very strong and capable leader who is also capable of deep compassion and maternal instincts, really setting her up as one of the icons of cinema. And so, you know, those are sort of the things that I think has allowed the series to have this lasting appeal. And then, of course, there are some overarching themes that are quite important. As I mentioned, the danger of unchecked corporate greed, the ethical implications of artificial intelligence, the obvious existential questions that are raised by humanity encountering an alien species in the universe. All of those themes are very rich, if you will. And so I think the series as a whole is highly experimental, which allows it to keep reinventing itself. And then having these consistent themes, which are very pertinent for our time. So I think that's probably contributed to its appeal.
Well, one thing we, you know, have talked a little bit about why Christians might consider watching it, but I do want to tell folks that this film is rated R, Alien Romulus. And there are probably, as we said, for some reason, high schoolers, teenagers, college kids, this kind of genre really appeals to them. So there are probably some older high school age students, 17 and up, who want to go out and see this film with their buddies. So what should Christian parents know about, or even Christians who sometimes say, well, I don't know, should I see a R-rated movie? If, you know, sometimes even if it's like there's no sexuality, it's just violence or gore or something like that. Are there some concerns that Christians or Christian parents should know about?
Yeah, Christians will go at this from the positive and then move into the things to be warned about. So Christians might find the Alien series interesting because it touches on several themes that align with broader ethical and moral questions. So just for instance, the series is frequently exploring the consequences of human hubris or forbidden knowledge. There's that theme again. And the dangers of playing God. This is especially evident in the prequel movies, Prometheus and Covenant, where these entities called engineers, which is an ancient alien race, create humanity. And then later, humans attempt to create life of their own through artificial intelligence and genetic experimentation. So the films sort of naturally raise these questions about the responsibilities that come with creation, the nature of existence, and the potential consequences of overreaching. The series also is depicting the struggle of, you know, survival, against destruction, endurance, and these are themes that should resonate with people just simply about the basic value and dignity of human life, the importance of moral choices as well. So there are some themes in there that I think Christians can certainly get their hands on and do some stuff with. Now, it's important that parents be aware that the Alien films contain very intense violence and strong language, some more than others. But the xenomorphs are often depicted in quite graphic detail, and certain horror elements can be quite gruesome. Some films take on a very dark tone, inching toward what we sometimes might think of as nihilism, especially films like Alien 3. It could be quite unsettling for some viewers. So vetting the series as a whole and being very picky about which ones you watch if you are someone who cares deeply about those things, that would probably be a good thing to do. I would say if you're going to consider watching the series, or at least seeing what it is, Alien and the sequel Aliens, the 79 film and the 86 film, that would be the place to start. And for a lot of people, that will be the place to stop.
So I'm just wanting to know, you talked a little bit that there's some prequel films that Ridley Scott made, Prometheus and Alien Covenant. So what is it about those particular films that are unique, and do they connect to this new one? The hard thing about this series is it's like there's like sub-series to the series. I mean, there's 9 films, but then we had the Predator element in that I might ask you about, and then also this other one. So it's kind of hard to keep it a little bit straight unless you're really into the Aliens lore. But specifically, you know, how do some of the other films connect to this particular one, Alien Romulus?
So we'll talk about the two prequel films quickly. Prometheus and Alien Covenant are unique entries in the Alien franchise because they shift the focus from the xenomorphs themselves to the larger mythology surrounding their origins. So Prometheus begins as a quest to discover the origins of humanity, with this group of explorers tracing these ancient star maps to a distant planet where they believe they'll find the engineers, this race of beings who supposedly created people. But the film takes this dark turn as the crew discovers the deadly experiments the engineers conducted, which lead to this creation of this sort of proto-xenomorph species. And that's where it wasn't, I don't think, promoted as an Alien film, but as your once viewers got there, those who actually knew the Alien movies when they were watching it sort of realized, oh, this is an Alien movie. The follow-up film, which does bear the title of Alien and is subtitled Covenant, continues the narrative. It follows this colony ship as they sort of stumble upon this planet. And the film gets into these themes of creation and destruction, exploring the consequences of this synthetic being called David. It's a character from Prometheus played by Michael Fassbender. Exploring his experiments to create the perfect organism, what he calls the perfect organism, which ultimately leads to the xenomorphs, which we know from the original films. So the prequels are quite unique in their philosophical approach. They seek to ask questions about the nature of creation, the role of creators, the ethical boundaries of science and technology. And then they connect, you know, directly to the broader Alien lore by providing a backstory for the xenomorphs and the engineers. And so it expands the universe of the original films. Now, do these prequels connect to Alien Romulus? Well, I mean, in the broader lore sense. But really, Romulus is much more of a direct sequel, in a sense. I guess the better way to say it would be like an in-between. It's a between movie from the first and the second. It begins with the salvaging operation that's scouring the remains of the ship from the first film. So even though Romulus could be considered a standalone movie, it is set between the first and the second film, and it doesn't sort of directly connect to the second film, but it certainly involves characters from the original film that the second film didn't explore. So it, in a lot of ways, it is a sequel, almost a direct sequel to the first film, but it just explores something that the second film didn't. So it's kind of a weird place if you're trying to think of it in terms of a timeline. It's an odd place in the timeline to tell a story. But it very much, I think, works from the perspective of what they were trying to do with Romulus, which is to go back to the series roots and what the series was doing in the first film. So that's sort of how Romulus is tied in.
So speaking of this film, what are some of the major themes that the film deals with? Do the themes in Romulus work with the series as a whole? Are they picking up with some of the themes, or are they exploring new themes?
No, I definitely think Romulus, everything from cinematography-wise to script structure-wise to themes, it stays very true to what's going on in that first film. I would say, you know, it does so to a fault, particularly the theme of corporate greed, unchecked ambition. Those themes, which are prominent in the series as a whole and in the first film as well, are fully on display here. The disregard of the corporate machine for human life, the disregard for basic human dignity, is still a major problem here, to the point where one of the, you can think of him as an antagonist outside of the alien, one of the antagonists from the first film sort of comes back in this one. And of course, this is all thanks to CGI and the digital de-aging software and all that kind of stuff. That's all the rage these days. So Romulus is very concerned with tethering itself, not just thematically, but visually, to what the first film was doing, to the style of the film, to the ideas that it was exploring, all that kind of stuff. And that theme of ambition run amok, that theme of the small team of scrappers who are sort of, you know, disregarded by the broader system, who are simply cogs in the machine, if you will, who come up against this threat and the machine has no interest in them. The machine has an interest in the threat that they're facing. It has an interest in the alien for scientific study, for scientific purpose. Those ideas are all throughout the film. Some of the drama in Alien, Romulus, is this android, one of the main characters of the movie, which is an android called Andy, sort of is given this chip from another half-destroyed android. And when the chip is inserted, his personality changes. He becomes much more detached because he's now sort of got this directive that he's operating from, which is, you know, you protect the company at all costs. So even if all of these humans have to die to keep these, you know, experiments under wraps, to keep these aliens from getting out or anything like that, then that's what it takes. And so a lot of the drama of the movie revolves around the main character's relationship to that android, the android's conflicting wiring, if you will, protecting the company, protecting the experiments and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I would say that thematically and visually and all that kind of stuff, Romulus is very much right there with that original film.
So finally, I want to ask you a little bit about one of the other like sub genres of the series that they're thinking of, a crossover, and that's reviving the Alien Predator films or another film in that kind of part of the Alien series. So is there any talk about another film in that genre of the Alien series? And what about the history of those two films together, those series mashups?
Yeah, so I think I saw where the director who was sort of responding to some questions, I think, on social media, and he mentioned that there's a possibility of doing another Alien versus Predator film. So now you got to kind of back up and go, what is this? what is this weird crossover history? Okay. So it's a fairly controversial one. I'm much more fond of the original Predator than I am the Alien films. I'll put that out there. But in the 1990 film, Predator 2, which had Danny Glover in it and is very different from the original Predator, I actually despise Predator 2. I've never liked it, never been a big fan of it. But in that film, and you got to think this is almost 20 years before Marvel started doing their stuff, right? In this film, there is a xenomorph skull that was sort of glimpsed on board a Predator ship. And what are you talking about? Well, in the Predator series, right, that original movie Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's all about this military group's encounter with this alien species, the titular Predator, which is sort of like this tribalistic group of hunters. They're alien hunters. And they go to different planets and they hunt aliens for sport, including people. So at the time, it's what you would have called an Easter egg. Oh, there's an alien skull in the movie. Oh, okay. But it actually sparked this sort of widespread fan interest. People got really excited about this idea of an alien and Predator crossover. And it eventually led to the creation of this comic book series called Alien vs. Predator, where it was a crossover between the two properties. Lo and behold, those comics proved popular enough that they actually made a film in 2004. So if you notice, the Alien movies sort of stop in the 90s and then pick back up with Prometheus in the 2010s. So what was going on in the 2000s? Well, Alien versus Predator is what was going on. So the first film, Alien versus Predator, comes out in 2004. And not horribly received. I mean, you would think that it would be the kind of sort of thing that would be hated and reviled, and it's actually not terrible. James Cameron actually is a fan of that film, so I figure if the movie can win over James Cameron, who made one of the sequels to Alien, arguably the best sequel to Alien, for him to look at it and go, I actually really liked it. It's probably not as bad as you would think it would be. So I've always sort of enjoyed the first one. Now the second one, which came out in 2007, was called Requiem, Alien versus Predator Requiem. I hate it, despised it. The reviews are terrible. And it sort of killed any momentum those movies had. So even though those films are not as critically acclaimed as the standalone entries in either of the franchises, Alien or Predator, they did sort of successfully manage to bring together two of the most iconic creatures of science fiction horror. And it was sort of, in a word, it's just kind of cool to have a Predator and an alien in a movie and to see them fight. It expands the mythology of both species. And it suggests that, the Predators have been hunting xenomorphs for sport for centuries, and that human involvement with these creatures goes back much further than what was previously known. So now both franchises are now under the ownership of Disney. And since then, there has been this sort of renewed speculation about another crossover. I know that Marvel has, I don't know if they still do, but I know when they acquired ownership, Marvel had both the Alien and Predator properties for comics. So I know that they were starting up some new comic series, and I feel like that would make a crossover inevitable in that space. But it certainly seems like, especially given the prominence of crossovers today, and universe building, you can pretty easily see how someone may come in and architect a new kind of series, if you are a new kind of movie, which brings Alien and Predator together again. And that's sort of the discussion about the crossover. Predator itself came back really with a vengeance with the film Prey a couple of years ago. I think that was a Hulu exclusive film, but it was a streaming film that came out and got great, great reviews. I really liked it. I saw it. I thought it was a great return to form for that series. So given the success of that film, given the success of this new Alien film, I certainly think that a crossover could potentially be in the cards going forward.
Well, now finally for a fun rapid-fire question for Cole as we end this podcast. And Cole, there's basically 9 films of all different sorts, including the Predator that you just talked about. What, if you could just narrow it down to 1 or 2, if people said, okay, I'm going to dip my toe into this entire universe, What are those two films that you would recommend from the Alien series?
From the Alien series, I would say do Alien and Aliens, the 79 film and the 86 film. If the question is Predator, I would say watch the original Predator and then watch Predators. There was a sequel to Predator called Predators. It did the same thing for Aliens, put a little S on the end. And then, of course, if you want to see the crossover between the two, then watch the first one, Alien versus Predator.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 408 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest is our frequent contributor on popular culture, Cole Brigette. He has written an exclusive online feature film review article for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called Alien Romulus, Risk Aversion, and the Parable of the Big Bad Company. And you can read it for free at our website, equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.